Part 1. Tell and the Hat on the Pole. Told by Mechthild, a peasant from Altdorf. What? You don't know about William Tell? You haven't heard the story yet? But everyone's talking about it. But you're not from here, I can see that. You're just passing through like so many others, from north to south or in the other direction. I often meet people like you. I come through here often. This is the best way to Erstfeld and back. My sister-in-law lives there, you know. Schattdorf is over there, and I often stop to rest here by the Reuss, just like you're doing today. A relaxing spot. The travellers, the merchants, the pilgrims, everybody follows the Reuss, either up into the mountains or down into the valley. It's been that way forever, and will probably always stay that way, because Gotthard is here to stay, no matter how the world turns. You have to get going, I know. But you must hear the story of how Tell stood up to Gessler. You must have enough time for that. How do I know about it? Well, listen to this. I was there. My name's Mechthild. I'm a peasant from Altdorf. Now imagine this. Gessler, the Habsburgs' bailiff, guardian of foreign power, had a pole erected in the middle of Altdorf, and his hat sat enthroned at the top of it. And the people had to salute it like a crown. I was with Hildegard and Elsbeth on the way to go buy some things, flour, sugar. We were actually trying to steer clear of Gessler's shameless hat. But Elsbeth's youngest, Rudy, is a cheeky one. He ran right up to the pole with the hat, leaving us all left behind. None of us wanted the guards to catch sight of us. They're not to be trifled with. Then Tell approaches us, William. He has his crossbow firmly in one hand, and he leads his boy Walter over to the others. Everyone here knows Tell, you know. He's an alpine herdsman and hunter. Helpful. A faithful soul. We Urians are a freedom-loving people. We can't be deceived. But Tell, from Burglen, he's even more spirited. He does what he thinks is right. Just recently, so people are saying, he brought Baumgarten across the lake in the middle of a storm when the bailiff's riders were on his tail. They'd invaded his house and harassed his wife. But Baumgarten wouldn't put up with it and defended his wife's honor. And he ended up beating the king's bailiff, Wolfenschießen, to death, so he was on the run. But a storm broke out, and it was too intense for the ferryman, and he didn't want to set out onto the lake. But it was a matter of life and death, so Tell took the rudder in his hand and steered the boat through the wind and waves to safe shores. Baumgarten was saved. Tell is just that kind of man, and Tell doesn't go looking for trouble, like all of us. He came to Altdorf to visit his father-in-law. Walter Fürst is a well-respected man here, so Tell just wants to go his way undisturbed, past the bailiff's guards. But then little Walter calls out loudly, "Look, the hat up on the pole! What's it there for?" "Come, my Walter, let's keep moving," the father answered him grumpily. And then the guard gets in their way.
"In the name of the Emperor, stop!"
"What do you want?" asks Tell.
"You didn't pay your respects to the hat," replies the guard.
Tell doesn't react at first. He wants to continue on past the guard, but he's in the way. Tell tries to appease him.
"My good friend, let me go." But the guard yells, "Jail! That's where you belong!"
Little Walter's frightened and begins to cry. And the commotion draws a lot of people over. Even the minister walks by and wants to know what all the excitement's about. So the guard yells at him, too.
"This man's a traitor, an enemy of the Kaiser!"
That was too much. That's when Tell really lets him have it.
"I'm a traitor,"
he replies. And with his powerful hands, Tell grabs him by the collar as if to shake some sense into him. He shakes him so hard that the stunned guard's helmet falls off his head. Tell's known for his stubbornness, you know. But he shouldn't have done that, because then comes the guard's comrade right away and aims his spear at Tell's chest. There's silence for a moment. Tell yields to the spear but holds his ground. Some say Elsbeth even saw Tell's chest bleeding from where the spear pierced the skin, but nevertheless Tell keeps his eyes locked on his adversary. Not a sound can be heard. Only little Walter's faint crying. The guards now have the upper hand and want to drag Tell away when little Walter spots his grandfather in the crowd.
He'd also hurried over because of the turmoil, but in his old age, he's not the quickest on his feet anymore. Walter Fürst is highly respected in all of Uri because of his composure and discretion, both of which were urgently needed at that moment. Still out of breath from being dragged over to the scene by young Walter, Walter Fürst intervenes.
Stop! Stop! Break it up! What's happening here?
Walter Fürst pushes Tell aside and shields him with his own body. The spear is now aimed at him. The guard is furious.
He's supposed to salute the hat, but he refuses.
Let him go, replies Walter Fürst.
Tell doesn't respect the bailiff. He must be punished.
The guard is enraged now. All alone with his comrades, surrounded by the people of Uri, he struggles to command respect and calls out,
To jail with him!
The people standing around make their disapproval known.
Liar,
some of them cry out.
Injustice,
shout the others. The atmosphere is not good. Only Walter Fürst remains calm. And as he keeps his protective arm around Tell's shoulder, he says with composure,
I can vouch for Tell. He meant no harm.
Anybody could just say that,
said the guard. Nobody had ever dared to speak to Walter Fürst so disrespectfully. None of us, and nor anyone in Schwyz or in the rural cantons either. Not even in Lucerne or in the lowlands. And in their rage, some of the Urians aggressively roll up their sleeves, ready for anything, and shout,
We stand by you, Fürst!
Or,
Tell's not going to jail!
Or even,
Beat them down!
The guards slowly begin to fear the possibility of revolt. They try to grab Tell so that they can finally leave the scene and get themselves to safety. But Walter Fürst and the people of Uri stand back to back, like a wall in front of Tell.
Don't you dare take away Tell from us,
Walter Fürst says in a thundering voice. Then the guard goes for him as well. The old man stumbles and holds himself up with his cane. Up to this point, Tell is holding little Walter, shielding him in the crowd and silently observing the skirmish. Up to this point. But now he shouts.
Enough, people of Uri! Go home! Thank you, but I'm not afraid of two puny henchmen!
But the crowd has made Tell's fight their own and won't be so easily assuaged. Meanwhile, the guards scream as loud as they can for reinforcement.
Mutiny! Help! Help the servants of the law!
A loud signal sounds.
The bailiff's bugle,
shouts Elsbeth. It's about to get dangerous, says Hildegard. We want to leave the scene right away to get ourselves and the children to safety, but Gessler's minions are faster and encircle the people of Uri. We're trapped. Gessler reacts without mercy, and now he's sitting on horseback looking down his nose at us Urians. He holds a falcon on his arm, as do only men of nobler rank than Gessler. But Gessler bucks his horse up and down and treads mightily towards the crowd. Nobody budges. But the mood is tense, like before an August storm when the air between the mountains turns green and the heat flickers on the meadows. Just one spark and the storm can break loose.
What's everybody doing here? Who's calling for help? Who's calling mutiny?
Gessler asks the crowd sharply. Everyone looks at the ground. To pick a quarrel with two guards is one thing, but against the bailiff one risks life and limb. Elspeth starts to get anxious. She holds her children close. Hildegard is completely pale. She peers around to find a gap between any of the armed foot soldiers, and my heart is pounding like mad from all the commotion. The guard with the spear points out Tell and reports what happened. Gessler silently looks down at Tell. Then he says,
You despise me.
Forgive me, sir. I was rash. I didn't wish to be disrespectful. Tell lowers his head apologetically. He's aware of the danger. And he's not alone. He's guarding his little Walter behind his back, as if he could keep him hidden from Gessler. Silence again. Gessler's eyes fall on Tell's weapon.
You're a master with the crossbow, they say. Nobody's a better shot. Is that true?
Tell hesitates to answer. But then little Walter steps proudly out from behind his father. Sir, my father can shoot an apple out of a tree from 100 paces away. Tell goes pale and tries to keep his son away from the bailiff. The man has no regard for children, and they only recognize the power of good. The power of an official position like the bailiff's means nothing to them. But Gessler's a vain man. He now patronizingly examines the child and father. Your son? He wants to know. Yes, he is, replies Tell. Do you have any more children? Asks Gessler. Tell hesitates. He's distrustful. The bailiff is up to something. But what? Finally, he says curtly, two boys, sir. And which one do you love more? Gessler retorts. Tell still doesn't know what the bailiff is scheming, but the question needs to be answered. I love them both equally. Gessler smirks wickedly and then begins. So, Tell, if you can really shoot an apple out of a tree, then you should prove it to me and shoot an apple off your son's head. Tell turns pale with terror. An outcry spreads through the crowd. The people's fear of the bailiff gives way to outrage over Gessler's disgraceful assignment. A father should aim at his son's head. What a vile wager! This is no place for children, Hildegard whispers to me. She's spotted a gap between the houses that we can escape through, and she carefully pulls me and Elsbeth and the children out of there. That was it. I swear it. You have to get going? I know. Me too. My sister-in-law's waiting. How it ended? Somebody else should tell you about that. Someone who was there. Someone who can bear witness with his eyes and relate how Tell answered Gessler through his actions. Have a safe journey. Part 2. The Apple Shot and Tell's Arrest, told by Werner Stauffacher, a farmer from Schwyz. Hello, where are you heading? Pardon me for looking so angry, but I've never seen a bailiff, a representative of the emperor, abuse his power like that. What? You don't understand? Well, I'm talking about William Tell and how Gessler gave him this deplorable task. The apple shot off the head of his own flesh and blood. People will still be recounting this atrocity 100 years from now, at least. How dreadful! But the times are difficult, politically speaking. The Habsburgs have their sights set on our Alpine passes. Gotthard was already always one of the most important links between North and South. That's why our country's of such great significance to Europe's kings. If one wants to go over the Gotthard Pass, one must come through here. So now the Habsburgs want our central Swiss to renounce the Kaiser and the German Reich. But the German Kaiser lets us live in peace, as long as we protect and maintain the roads for the transport of people and goods. But Gessler, the Habsburg, he doesn't respect that. That's why I was here, in Uri. I'm Werner Stauffacher, a farmer from Schwyz, and I came to Altdorf together with Melchtal from Unterwalden. The men from Uri, Schwyz and Unterwalden on the Rütli Meadow have just renewed the Central Swiss Confederacy's vow to stand by each other in the face of danger like a nation of brothers. And now, there's Gessler's hat on the pole. Let me tell you, we salute the Kaiser's crown, but not the bailiff's hat. Because Gessler's just the Kaiser's vassal, so we, the people of Uri, Schwyz and the rural cantons, have more freedom than he does. But woe betide us if we make him understand that. And now Tell must suffer the consequences. And so he stands in front of Gessler, alone. Next to me, Melchtal, a young hothead whom I could hardly hold back. He's ready to start fighting. But we're surrounded by the bailiff's foot soldiers, all in armor and armed with swords and lances. It would be an unfair fight. He's as pale as clay now, Tell. He's almost stuttering, struggling to maintain composure. How can a father shoot at his own son? But Gessler remains merciless. You will shoot the apple from your boy's head. I want it so, he commands. Then he leads his horse to a market stall where there are apples displayed for sale. He grabs the one on the very top and comes back. He tosses the apple with sinister joy from one hand to the other. Meanwhile, Tell asks for forgiveness. He would rather die than put his child in danger. But Gessler remains cold. He only says, "If you don't shoot, then both of you will die." Tell's now silent. Like everyone else on the square, he thinks this must be some kind of wicked, terrible joke. But Gessler's not joking. "Here!" He throws the apple to Tell. Tell catches the apple, silent and bewildered. Then Gessler calls out to the crowd, "Clear a path! 80 paces should be long enough. Your son boasted that you can do it from 100. I'm even showing you a little mercy. Now show me what you can do." Nobody moves. Nobody wants to clear a pathway. So Gessler sends his foot soldiers to do it. They shove the people away, push, jab, even threaten with their weapons until a path is cleared, just as the bailiff ordered. The people are teeming with resentment. Walter Fürst grabs Melchtal by the arm. The old man holds the youth back with all his might. There's nothing they can do, but it's hard to endure something so cruel. Tell stands in front of his little Walter and looks at him. The father's still speechless, numbed by the impossible task. Fear has gripped him, and he has no idea what to do. Gessler circles around him. He provokes him. "Anyone can shoot practice targets, but the true master proves himself when something is really at stake. That's true marksmanship." And as Walter Fürst holds back the hot-blooded Melchtal, he suddenly blurts out, "Gessler, sir, put mercy before justice. Take my wealth, take my house, but please have mercy on Tell. Spare him this." With that, he throws himself down before Gessler in order to appease him and to dissuade him from his intentions. But before Gessler can react, little Walter takes his grandfather by the arm, helps him up onto his feet, and says calmly, "Don't kneel before the wrong man. Father will hit the apple." Then he goes back to Tell, takes the apple out of his father's hand and says, "I'm ready." Gessler's irritated by little Walter's courage, and now he screams with even more authority,
"Tie the child to that linden tree there so that he can't run away at the last moment."
"Oh, I'm not going to run away. I'm very calm," says Walter. But Gessler doesn't let up.
"Then blindfold him so that he doesn't flinch."
"What do you think? That I'm afraid of my father's arrow? I know what he can do." But little Walter's confidence only made Gessler sneer angrily because he knows he can't lose. The crowd is deeply moved as the boy measures out 80 paces to the linden tree and turns to his father. "Gessler doesn't believe you, but I know you'll hit the apple." Then he sets the apple on his head and waits calmly, as if he has no idea of the danger he's in. Melchtal can't be held back anymore.
"What's the point of this? Are you going to let this happen?"
he shouts at the people as he stands in the pathway to prevent the wicked shot. But he's immediately faced with a forest of lances. "In order to avoid more bloodshed, I step forward and pull Melchtal back into the crowd. We have no weapons," I whisper to him, and I see in his eyes that he would rather enter into a futile battle than stand back and allow this disaster to occur. "Our time will come, certainly," I whisper to him, but that hardly reassures him.
"Let's go. If a farmer proudly wears his crossbow, then he shouldn't be surprised if he has to use it. Come on, Tell, or you'll be in for it."
Gessler's getting impatient. Tell composes himself. He has no other choice. He cocks the crossbow and loads an arrow. He takes a deep breath. Then he aims. It's dead silent. Tell's arm's trembling, as if he hasn't aimed, shot, and hit a target 1,000 times before. He's sweating. Then he lowers the crossbow again.
"Sir, you've made your point. Forget the test, forget the shot. Take my life, but let the boy go."
Tell leans on his crossbow, exhausted. He appears to be finished. But Gessler knows no mercy.
"I don't want your life. I want the shot. I want to drive the arrogance out of you and all the imperious mountain people here."
and with a signal from Gessler, two mercenaries go over to Little Walter, ready to bludgeon him with their lances if Tell doesn't obey. Tell, at the other end of the pathway, understands clearly. Nothing can be accomplished with words, and he pulls himself together. He straightens himself up. He looks for a long time into the peaceful eyes of his child. Then he turns his gaze to Gessler, and with a serious look he takes a second arrow out of his quiver and sticks it in his pocket. Gessler notices the peculiar gesture. He doesn't say anything, though. Tell turns to Walter. He smiles at him. He takes a deep breath. He gathers himself and takes aim again, this time more determined. No trembling in the arm.
Go ahead!
Gessler squirms in his saddle. He can hardly wait for the foul deed. The people of Uri hold their breath, as if they were all in Tell's shoes. One small mistake, even just one breath of wind, and the child's dead. But Tell stands unwavering. Then he shoots. The arrow shoots out and flies down the path towards the apple on the child's head until the metal tip strikes with a dull blow and hits the apple.
The apple was hit!
Shout some.
The boy's alive!
Cry the others. The relief is tremendous. I have Melchtal in my arms. Tell's successful apple shot is a victory for all of central Switzerland against the oppressors. Walter comes running to Tell.
See, I knew it!
And then he proudly shows him the apple with the arrow through it. But Tell pays no attention to the trophy. He can't even believe what he did. Full of joy, he takes his son in his arms. Gessler's also astonished. He never believed that Tell would hit the apple. Suspicious, he intervenes.
Just a moment!
Everybody's joy and delight comes momentarily to a halt.
Just now you stuck a second arrow in your pocket. Why?
Gessler wants to know.
It's just a habit.
Gessler appeared friendly.
A likely story. Come on, tell me the truth. Your life's not in danger. My word of honor.
Tell hesitates. Why the question? He takes the arrow out of his pocket. But Gessler gave his word of honor publicly. Eventually, he manages to give an answer.
The second arrow was meant for you. If I'd hit my son.
Gessler doesn't delay long.
Arrest him!
Come his orders. The crowd is in uproar. Could Gessler really go back on his word after he'd just given it?
I heckle him. That's how you treat a man who followed your orders and to whom you gave your word in exchange for his honesty?
Tell looks stunned.
I'll let you live, but you're dangerous. Therefore, I must imprison you in my dungeon. Those who are smart will learn to keep quiet and follow orders.
And the bailiff rides away. Tell understands quickly. Before Gessler's soldiers can grab him, he embraces Walter one last time. You're unarmed. That's the most important thing. And then they tear him away. The nightmare is over, and the people slowly leave the square, saddened.
Why did Tell tempt the bailiff like that? Thought Walter first sadly.
We have to torment him much more, relentlessly, said Melchtal, plotting revenge.
What should we have done? We were unarmed.
Tell is an honest man, too honest, so he fell into Gessler's trap. But when one of us is taken away in such an unjust manner, then it's an attack on the whole community. Today we're all Tell's sons.
Uri, Schwyz and Unterwalden will now deliberate. And then Gessler and the Habsburgs will see how determined we are to be free, through violence if necessary. That's what we swore in the Rutli Meadow. Now, time is of the essence. I have to keep going. Farewell.
Part 3. Tell's Leap. Told by a fisher boy at the Lake of Lucerne.
Greetings. What brings you here?
William Tell.
Yes, exactly. This is where it happened. Over there, beyond the lake, is Selisberg. And on the left, that's where they came from Fluelen. And on the right, that's where they wanted to go, to Küssnacht, to the castle of the bailiff,
Gessler planned to imprison Tell in the darkest dungeon so that the spirit of rebellion would desert him and all the Swiss people. Today the sun's shining. It looks peaceful here. The mountains rise steeply from the blue water. The lake is as smooth as glass. You're almost tempted to jump in and have a swim. But when Tell passed this way, there was a storm. For when the fern wind blows through the narrow valleys, all the might of the mountains is revealed. And it was a storm like no other. Thunder chased lightning. Rain and hail took turns to fall down. This was no ordinary storm. And I know what I'm talking about. My family's lived here for generations. We're fishermen, and we live with the lake. I've moored our boat securely because I saw the barge with the bailiff's flag tossed about helplessly on the lake, buffeted by the wind and the waves. News spread quickly of what happened to Tell in Altdorf, so I knew he must have been chained up there on the barge. I would have been glad to see Gessler go under, but now I was worried about Tell. And it doesn't look good. The crew's gesturing wildly on the deck. They can't reach an agreement. Nothing can be heard over the howling of the storm. The barge drifts off course, behind the massive Axenberg mountain where so many ships have been shattered. But try as you might, you can't see behind the rocky outcrop. That's where the barge disappears. Is William Tell lost? I fear that he is. Chained hand and foot and dashed against craggy rocks. No one could survive it. But I myself have a job to finish. One of the boats is beating hard against the shore. I must see to it at once or it may get damaged. At first I don't notice when a man comes running along the embankment, but now he's standing before me, a crossbow and quiver held tightly in his hands. Heavens, I say. Are you Tell? Weren't you a prisoner on the bailiff's barge? Tell nods. I've been freed. And Gessler? Still tossed about on the waves. How did you escape the barge? You can see that Tell's in a hurry, but I'm so amazed it's as if I were standing before a ghost. So he tells me what happened. I'm lying in chains on the deck of the ship. The storm whips up madly around us. What weather! Gessler's determined to head back to Küssnacht, but the helmsman fights the rudder back and forth. The mercenaries are seized with a fear of drowning pitifully in their iron armor. Panic spreads. I have to admit I'd given myself up for lost. I already saw myself rotting in prison. My hands and feet were bound so tightly that I couldn't see a way out. But one of the mercenaries gathered courage and I heard him say to the bailiff, Tell could steer a ship on the lake where no one else would dare. Let him try. Our lives are all at stake. The bailiff looks at me and thinks it over. Then he comes over to me. I'll unchain you if you'll bring us safely ashore. I nod, and he sets me free. So I take my place at the rudder. The storm drives the waves high, right over the ship, but I manage to stay on course along the steep bank. My crossbow and my quiver full of bolts are lying not far from me now. A new hope is stirred. Maybe now I could make my escape. But the shore here is craggy and steep. I know, even when the weather's good here, we hardly leave our boats, I blurt out. Tell smiles, seeing that I'm so excited I can hardly wait. Then he resumes his tale. All at once, I discover a rock slab. It's flat enough, but also fairly tall. The wind and the waves are still tossing the barge about, but I don't see any alternative. It's the only way out. So I steer straight for it. The barge rises and falls on the waves. And then at the right moment, before Gessler and his mercenaries realize what I'm up to, I grab my crossbow and bolts, race to the prow of the ship, and leap with all my might onto the Rock of Salvation, using my other leg to push the bailiff's barge back into the lake, where without a helmsman, it once again becomes a plaything for the waves. That's how I escape from the barge and the bailiff's chains. I simply stand there, open-mouthed. Tell must find it amusing because he gives me a friendly pat on the shoulder. Then he turns serious. I'm still not done with Gessler. What's the fastest way to Arten Küssnacht? I point out the way. There. And I offer to accompany him. Tell grimaces. What I have to do now, I must do alone. What are you planning? I ask. You'll find out when it's done. Then he turns away and hurries down the path to Küssnacht. That's how it happened. And I was a witness.
Well, now I have to head onto the lake. The nets don't fill with fish by themselves. Enjoy the rest of your journey.
Part 4. Tyrannicide. Told by Stussy, a hunter.
Hello. Wondering if you've come to the right place?
Hohle Gasse is the name of this place.
Exactly. This is where it happened.
Here, deep in the forest, where the road to Küssnacht is lined with high earthworks and overgrown with rootstocks, where shadows and shrubs offer a good cover for hunters. This is where Tell confronted Gessler. There, up ahead, by the elderberry bush that clings to the edge. That's where Tell lay in wait. I was making my daily rounds. I'm Stussy, by the way, and I'm a hunter by trade. Forest ranger is another name for it. I didn't see him at first. I only heard him. A man in the woods talking to himself, arguing with himself. Very strange. There's no other road to Küssnacht. He has to pass through here, he muttered to himself. I drew a bit closer, carefully. He hasn't noticed me yet. Then he continued. All I wanted was to live my life in peace, but forcing me to shoot at my own child shows only your evil intentions. Pure evil. A king wouldn't even demand it of a simple man, let alone a bailiff. Only then did I understand, for I had heard the story. It had spread like wildfire all around Lake Lucerne. The man must be William Tell. But what's he planning? Why is he here? I vowed to myself that my next shot would be at Gessler. This is my last arrow. Here is where I'll end it. I'll hit the treacherous ruler from here. I can hardly breathe. Then he raises his crossbow, as skillfully as only a hunter or warrior can, draws the bow, loads his final bolt, and takes up a position in his hiding place. He's ready to catch the merciless Gessler. But the foe has yet to appear. Instead, a group of travellers in high spirits approach noisily on a wagon. I know the man holding the reins. He's an estate manager from Merlischachen Abbey, a rich man, driving his daughter joyfully to her wedding. The mood on the road is suddenly cheerful, where before it was stern and wrathful. Tell takes even greater care to stay hidden. As the group passes by, I extend a friendly greeting to the wedding guests. They promptly invite me to join them, but I decline the invitation gratefully. Despite my refusal, I follow them a few steps until I'm standing where Tell's hiding, and I act as if I were stumbling upon him accidentally.
Hello, you there. The father of the bride is a generous man. Come with us. Everybody's invited to the wedding party.
I'm not quite sure why I said this, but Tell was deeply troubled. I'd heard as much before, and I saw it now in his face. Maybe I wanted to keep him from carrying out his plans.
I would be a poor guest, Tell answered me.
He emerged somewhat from his hiding place.
You must be William Tell of Uri.
I am.
Your story's told here in Schwyz, too.
I didn't seek a quarrel.
The bailiff should pass by here today.
I know. Tell remains stern and reserved. He seems deeply troubled by what he plans to do. All at once, a shabbily dressed woman comes down the path with her two children, a girl and a boy. She looks nervous, and it seems as if she and her children are hungry.
Was the bailiff already here? She asks quickly.
Not recently. And so she and her children sit in the middle of the path.
What are you doing there?
I'm startled.
I'll wait here, replies the woman in surprise.
If you want to speak to the bailiff, why not do so in his office at the castle?
He avoids me, she answers bitterly.
I hear the pounding of horses' hooves. I turn around, and Gessler emerges, alone. He rides so fast that his mercenaries are unable to keep up with him on foot. Tell vanishes instantly. The woman holds her children tightly in her arms, blocking Gessler's way. I'm almost certain he'll run over the woman and children at full gallop, but he halts his horse at the last second.
Out of the way!
He thunders.
My lord, hear me out at last, she replies.
Come to my castle! Don't detain me here!
Growls Gessler, and prepares to ride on. But the woman remains steadfast.
I've been there so many times, always in vain. You've always turned me away. I won't move out of your way until you hear me out.
No respect anywhere in this stiff-necked land.
The bailiff shows no understanding for the problems of the poor.
Hear me, sir. My husband has already spent 6 months in your prison.
He must have earned it,
interrupts Gessler angrily.
My children and I are forced to starve without my husband's income. Please have mercy.
As she speaks, she shows him her frightened children.
I'm far too lenient with you Swiss people.
But, sir, my husband has done nothing. He sits in your dungeon, an innocent man.
That's what they all say.
Gessler grows more and more impatient.
Doesn't he at least deserve a fair trial?
The woman stands up defiantly to Gessler. The horse snorts, and the rider seethes.
The Emperor didn't send me to this country to curry favor with the rabble. When even peasants make demands of noblemen, rebellion is not far off. Out of my way!
I won't get out of your way until you release my husband from prison.
But Gessler no longer listens. The situation is merely troublesome for him. I myself only stood there as a witness. What should I do? Should I now intervene and help the woman with her petition? Should I tell Gessler that Tell's waiting for him with a crossbow? But the decision is quickly made for me. For in a fit of despair, the woman now seizes the reins of Gessler's horse in an attempt to keep him there. But Gessler, filled with rage, causes his horse to rear up, digs his spurs in the animal's sides, and prepares to ride over the woman and her children, heedless of the consequences.
I drag the woman and the girl from the path to save them from the wrath of the bailiff and the pounding of the horse's hooves. And now a crossbow bolt strikes Gessler like a bolt from the blue, piercing the bailiff through the heart.
He stiffens instantly and looks wide-eyed around him, searching for the shooter. He recognizes Tell, who emerges from the thicket. They look at each other, wordlessly. And it's as if Tell wants Gessler to know exactly who ended his life.
Mercenaries!
Gessler shouts, his voice breaking. But his strength has already left him. At first he slumps forward, but then he slips from the saddle and falls hard on the ground. And there he lies, alone and helpless, until the last glimmer of life has drained from his body. The tyrant is dead. The woman gathers her children and withdraws, with the face of an innocent bystander. She has no sympathy, but then why should she? Tell stands motionless for a long time. No joy. No sign of triumph over the adversary. Tell's a hunter like me, and every hunter knows how serious it is to take the life of an animal. How much more serious, then, when it concerns a man? But so were the times. After all, no one should commit murder, regardless of how justified it seems in the heat of the moment. If he goes through with it anyway, the deed will haunt him forever. We are always alone with our guilt. But Tell went through with it, from a father's need and for the good of his family. And in doing so, he freed the entire nation from the repression of a tyrant. The world was a safer place for mankind afterwards. Is this good, or is it reprehensible? Who knows? But no one sheds a tear for Gessler, neither in central Switzerland nor deep in the lowlands. The tyrannicide marks the beginning of Switzerland, so we tell ourselves. The story here continues. After Gessler's death, the Swiss rose up. The League of Uri, Schwyz, and Unterwalden took arms against the fortresses of the Habsburgs. Sarnen Castle, Rossburg Castle, one after another fell. And Zwing Uri Castle, too, was destroyed. And in the end, Switzerland became a free country. Many forces work to ensure it stays that way. One of them is luck. Politics is a complicated thing, and things seldom go according to plan. Switzerland is a small country in the middle of Europe. Gotthard is important for people, trade, and traffic between northern and southern Europe, and it will always remain so. As a result, the country has been thrust time and again into the center of history. But William Tell had nothing more to do with the outcome of large-scale world politics. He had no interest in power or public office. he hung up his crossbow and preferred to go home. He went on living with his wife and children as before. The Swiss celebrated Tell and his deed, and they loved to tell his story again and again. Today and in the future, too. It seems that the world needs heroes. Fantastic stories about men and women who achieved something great and sacrificed a great deal for it. But the real person vanishes quickly behind the legend. Their deeds are embellished, because let's be honest, every man and every woman who retells the story of William Tell always adds something to it. That's how it goes. But if you want to continue on your journey, look around. The mountains and valleys are still the same. The places where history was made can still be found, now as then. The River Reuss still flows from Gotthard through Schellenen Gorge down to Göschenen. Between Erstfeld and Altdorf and by Schattdorf it grows quieter. And there's a beautiful spot to take a break there. Be sure not to miss it. But the Reuss flows ever onward, first into Lake Lucerne, then into the Aare River, then the Rhine, and finally the North Sea. And the Ticino leads in the opposite direction, southward. It flows into the Po, which traverses northern Italy before emptying into the Adriatic Sea. Here in the center of Europe, where the rivers spring forth, it's William Tell's territory, the site of his and many other stories. I wish you a pleasant journey. May you reach your goal. And so, farewell. This story about the legendary Uri native was presented to you by Gotthard Motorway Service Area. We wish you a pleasant, enjoyable trip.